Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Novelist, screenwriter, and director Nora Ephron knows a thing or two about life, and she shares the story of her breakup as a young mother with Watergate star reporter Carl Bernstein in The Thinly Veiled Heartburn, sex and the friendship of men and women in When Harry Met Sally, There Was Silkwood, and Sleepless in Seattle, and You've Got Mail, and Kids, and Three Marriages. And suddenly, Nora Ephron is 65 years old, and she's not going to pretend, she says, that she likes it. The endless battle with gray hair and gravity, and, despite all success, with regrets. Getting old may beat the alternative, but Nora Ephron has issues with it anyway. Up next on Point, Nora Ephron turns her comic eye on life and age. Joining me now from Los Angeles is Nora Ephron, novelist, screenwriter, and director. She received Academy Award nominations for three of her screenplays, When Harry Met Sally, Silkwood, and Sleepless in Seattle. Her new collection of essays is called I Feel Bad About My Neck and Other Thoughts About Being a Woman. The New York Times describes her as smart, fearless, and blisteringly funny. Nora Ephron, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be here, Tom.
It's great to have you. I read it over the weekend. My wife read it. We laughed. We cried. It was just, It's just terrific. And we had a great time. It left me thinking, thank heavens for women who can talk about these things so much better than men, but it works for men and women. What got you started on age? Was it just the number?
No, it was not the number. It was the feeling of being, of reading so much stuff that was just irrelevant to the number. Of reading all these peppy books about how great it was to be older. And I kept thinking, yeah, well, it's great to be here. Let's get that out of the way.
Beats the alternative, you're right.
But it's so much more complicated than it's great to be older. And why does nobody write about that? This was especially true when I went through the M word, which more nonsense has been written about since everyone started writing about it. Before I went through it, no one had ever written anything about it as far as I could tell.
M as in menopause. Let's spell it out for the guys.
M as in, yes. But then there was a sort of avalanche of books about how great it was going to be free from everything. And it is true that for about the first year or so, or two maybe, it's not that bad. But then you just kind of go, what are they talking about? And then as I got older, it continued. There were just all these boostery things being written called stuff like the wisdom of menopause and how, you know, how you were going to be wiser. And
yes,
and,
yes, sure.
And it is true that you get a little smarter when you get older. But most of us would trade the 1.5 IQ points for 5 years any moment. Not that anyone is making that offer. So anyway,
it certainly works for the rest of us. I mean, I'm sorry, Nora, if you're not entirely glad to have arrived at that number. But, you know, to have you bring your eye and your wit and your sense of humor to it, well, there's something in it for us, I have to say. I'm grateful for that.
Thank you. Anyway, I just sat down one day and made a list of the things I thought would be fun to write about. And then I kind of wrote them. And I had fun doing it. Some of it was... When I realized that no one had written about maintenance, for example, which is practically a second career.
The oils and creams and dyes and you name it.
Yes. I mean, you name it. I can name it. I could go on forever about it. And pedicures and manicures. And I'm amazed I'm here with you today, Tom, I have things to do, you know?
Right.
I could have a chipped nail at any moment and have to just leave where I am.
Which may may not turn back or forward the hands of time, but all in all, you write about how many weeks and months and certainly many, many hours it takes for women. You start with the neck, the thing that nothing
can be.
And dollars, right.
Yes, let's not forget dollars.
I wish you'd read a little bit for us about this neck business that you've got right in the title. I feel bad about my neck, and it's not because you sprained it. There's a bit early on in the book. I wish you'd share with us, Nora Ephron.
I will. Here it is. Sometimes I go out to lunch with my girlfriends. I got that far into the sentence and caught myself. I suppose I mean my women friends. We are no longer girls and have not been girls for 40 years. Anyway, sometimes we go out to lunch and I look around the table and realize we're all wearing turtleneck sweaters. Sometimes, instead, we're all wearing scarves like Katharine Hepburn in On Golden Pond. Sometimes we're all wearing Mandarin collars and look like a white lady's version of the Joy Luck Club. It's sort of funny and it's sort of sad because we're not neurotic about age. None of us lies about how old she is, for instance, and none of us dresses in a way that's inappropriate for our years. We all look good for our age, except for our necks. Oh, the necks. There are chicken necks. There are turkey gobbler necks. There are elephant necks. There are necks with wattles and necks with creases that are on the verge of becoming wattles. There are scrawny necks and fat necks, loose necks, crepey necks, banded necks, wrinkled necks, stringy necks, saggy necks, flabby necks, mottled necks. There are necks that are an amazing combination of all of the above. According to my dermatologist, the neck starts to go at 43, and that's that. You can put makeup on your face and concealer under your eyes and dye on your hair. You can shoot collagen and Botox and Restylane into your wrinkles and creases, but short of surgery, there's not a damn thing you can do about a neck. The neck is a dead giveaway. Our faces are lies, and our necks are the truth. You have to cut open a redwood tree to see how old it is, but you wouldn't have to if it had a neck.
Nora Ephron reading from her new collection of essays, I Feel Bad About My Neck. And, I mean, you've got so many neck comments in here. You write that the plastic surgeon told you, or a friend, I forget, that the only way to solve it is a full facelift. I mean, you have to pull the skin kind of all the
way. If you fix your neck, they also have to pull behind your ears, and that kind of tucks you up. And that's fine for some women, by the way. I want to make clear right now, I have no position against doing anything as long as you go to a decent doctor. But I'm one of those people with a little bird face, so I get worried that if I were to do something major, I would not recognize myself in the mirror. And that, I think, is something that would be scary at a certain point.
Not wanting to look, you're right, suspiciously like a drum pad with the skin
pulled too tight. Yes, right.
So that's the thing you can't do anything about.
Remember Martha Graham? Remember what happened? Yeah.
The look of eternal dismay, surprise.
Yes, surprise. Hello.
And so we're into
I'm awake. Right? I'm so awake.
Wide awake, dancing on the edge. Take us into that maintenance realm of all this. Maybe you can't do anything about your neck, or you won't anyway, but there's plenty of maintenance. Take us into some of that.
Well, I think one of the interesting things about how much there is to do, and by the way, this is not just for older women. Younger women, I think, spend as much time on maintenance as we do. In fact, they have more to maintain because they do bizarre things like waxing their bikinis into the shape of topiaries. But, there's all these things we have to do. Just washing your hair. You know, I'm so tired of washing my hair. I mean, I write in the book that I secretly think that not having to wash your hair anymore may be the secret upside of death. But, there are people who wash their hair every day. Why do they do this? It takes so long, and then you have to blow it out. And then there's dyeing your hair, which is almost a career, especially if you are lightening it in any way. and nails, which we didn't do anything about for years. I mean, it crossed my mind the other day that the only time I ever had manicures in my youth was when I got married. I had like three manicures for the first 43 years of my life.
And now in New York City, where you spend most of your time, manicure shops everywhere. Not forget every corner, every other shop.
Yes, but I mean, you have them in Massachusetts too.
Sure.
Don't pretend
all
you
over
don't.
The country, sure.
They just like mushrooms. One day you had to have a manicure. And how did you know this? Because there was a manicure store everywhere. And pedicures, which have that real excitement, which is, are you going to make it home before ruining it? And hair, you know, I mean, hair, removal of hair.
Is all this really necessary, Nora Ephron? I mean, what about just au naturel? Is that gone with the wind?
Well, I don't know. I think there are au naturel women, but I just know it. I knew at a certain point I wasn't going to be one of them. And if I looked au naturel, it would not be good. I don't think it would be good. I think I would look, I don't want to get carried away here. I'm not one of those, you know, those feminists who are always having their little bag lady fantasies. But I think I would look like a bag lady.
We're talking this hour with novelist, screenwriter, director Nora Ephron about life and aging. Her new book is I Feel Bad About My Neck. It is funny. And more than that, let's just remember how Harry met Sally. Age was right in there.
I'm difficult. I'm too structured. I'm completely closed off.
But in a good way.
And I'm gonna be 40.
When?
Someday.
In 8 years.
It's not the same for men. Charlie Chaplin had babies when he was 73.
Yeah, but he was too old to pick them up.
Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan in Nora Ephron's When Harry Met Sally. She's going to be 40 someday. When
listen
does all this
to
start
Meg.
To come on like a nightmare?
I know. You know, listen to Meg Ryan taking the word someday and making it funny. That's your dream in an actress,
yeah, absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. But then there's also the piece right in there about how men and women look at this differently. And I wonder about your thoughts on that. Do you find women truly more aware? Are they held to a different standard? Are they more willing to talk about it? Or are they just more capable of talking?
Well, I don't think there's any question but that women have always been more interested in what they and concerned about what they look like. There are signs that men are either, I don't know if the word is catching up because this may not be good, But I did bump into a friend of mine the other night in New York where it was about 103 and he was wearing a turtleneck. And I thought, oh, you had something done. You had something done to your chin.
A little nip, a little tuck.
Yeah, he did. So, but I don't think there's any question but that women think about this. Listen, everybody thinks about it. And the truth is, it's one of the great dilemmas of getting older is that you are completely torn between your genuine intelligence, which is that you are so happy to be alive. You're so happy to be on the planet. You're so happy not to be the alternative to that. And you try to focus on that and to focus on the really important things like the ceasefire in the Middle East and things like that. And then you wake up in the morning and you look in the mirror and you go, whoa, where did that come from? So it's a confusing, complicated time. And it's sort of comical that you bounce between trying to be a really good person with important values and a completely trivial one who wishes you looked a little younger.
You're wise, and then
and
you look
we're
around,
a little, you know.
And on it comes. It's great to have you, Nora Ephron. I want to steal another reading from you, if we can. There's a bit in the maintenance chapter about hair dye and how it's kind of changed everything. Starting with you dive in with Gloria Steinem there. Would you be kind enough to read that for us, if you have the time, even at this stage in life?
Many years ago, when Gloria Steinem turned 40, someone complimented her on how remarkably young she looked, and she replied, "This is what 40 looks like." It was a great line, and I wish I'd said it. "This is what 40 looks like" led inevitably to its most significant corollary. 40 is the new 30, which led to many other corollaries. 50 is the new 40, 60 is the new 50, and even restaurants are the new theater. Focaccia is the new quiche, etc. Anyway, here's the point. There's a reason why 40, 50, and 60 don't look the way they used to, and it's not because of feminism or better living through exercise. It's because of hair dye. In the 1950s, only 7% of American women dyed their hair. Today, there are parts of Manhattan and Los Angeles where there are no gray-haired women at all. Once, some years ago, I went to Le Cirque, a well-known New York restaurant, to a lunch in honor of a woman named Jean Harris, who had just that week been released from 12 years in prison for murdering her diet doctor boyfriend, and she was the only woman in the restaurant with gray hair. Hair dye has changed everything, but it almost never gets the credit. It's the most powerful weapon older women have against the youth culture, and because it actually succeeds at stopping the clock, at least where your hair color is concerned, it makes women open to far more drastic procedures like facelifts. I can make a case that it's at least partly responsible for the number of women entering and managing to stay in the job market in middle and late middle age, as well as for all sorts of fashion trends. For example, it's one of the reasons women don't wear hats anymore, and it's entirely the reason that everyone I know has a closet full of black clothes.
Nora Ephron reading from I Feel Bad About My Neck. Black, you say, having been only for Italian war widows until suddenly women had dark hair, older women, and it looked great. But you, to try and find that gray-haired woman on the streets of New York, you travel there.
Well, there are gray-haired women on the streets of New York, and I'm exaggerating a little bit, but not much. Not much.
I want to begin to let our callers in here with you, Nora. Stephanie's calling from Waterbury, Connecticut. Hi, Stephanie. You're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi.
First of all, Nora, I admire you greatly. You always touch the funny bones. You are just, you're wonderful.
Thank
you're
you, Stephanie.
Second of all, I would like my undergarments now to come with engineering reports to see if they really do what they're supposed to do.
Well, I'll tell you one thing they do that they're not supposed to do. Some of them hurt. Have you noticed that?
Some of them are very much hurt, but pain is good when it makes you look good. As Billy Crystal once said, you look marvelous. In any event, I am going through a rather odd situation I never thought I would have to go through.
What's that, Stephanie?
I always thought that I would marry out of college and have my children, and then in my 40s I would be on cruises and have wonderful... Well, my daughter arrived when I was 41. She's 8 now, and all of my friends, every blessed last one of them, we all had our children after the age of 38.
So you're still picking up toys as the talk clicks away, clock ticks away.
Picking up toys and making the grunting grandma sound as we bend down to pick the toys up. But
someday you're going to be
across the same problem. Women are coming up to us, the younger ones, and saying, "Oh, your granddaughter is so beautiful." Well, she's not my granddaughter. Oh, your niece, she's not my niece. Your daughter? Yes. Where did you adopt? I didn't adopt. I had her naturally in a teaching hospital. Are you satisfied? And they're looking at us as though we had several heads, none of which worked properly.
I have some advice for you, Stephanie. Move to the west side of Manhattan. You'll be a young mother.
Right.
I have friends who adopted at 53. Really.
And do the math from there. And
yeah. So, you know, but this is just one of those things that now that they're old, you know, actually, this is a very interesting thing. We could do a whole show on this, Stephanie, because part of this is nonsense. Part of this is just women trying to one-up one another. Don't you think there's a little of this?
Stephanie, are you just one-upping the neighbors at 41? Or maybe not.
Exactly. Exactly. And the thing with the names, too. Why are names getting so unusual and so strange, and what are children going to do with that when they're in high school? One last tiny comment.
Yeah.
And this is a question which has plagued me for years. Why is men's hair color 5 minutes and women's is 30?
Okay, we'll go with that, Stephanie.
That's a really good question, but you know, their hair color doesn't look as good as ours.
Yeah, there you go.
You have to say that. I mean, those guys I know who dye their hair black look kind of creepy and weird. And then there's the ones who dye their hair red, that kind of strange old guy red. I don't know. I think they could take a little longer myself.
What was
they
that?
They use that
Gebhardt's
stuff.
Hair came in somewhere here, and maybe
Dick
that's natural.
Gebhardt, but you know, I mean, some of them just put it on in the shower.
Right.
We go to the beauty parlor where we are not only able to lose hours from our lives, but we can pick up a copy of Vogue, find a new procedure in plastic surgery, and spend thousands of dollars as a result.
Maybe. Stephanie, thanks for your call. Kathy's on the line. Hi, Kathy. You're on the air.
Yes. Good morning, Nora. I'm calling to say thank you for telling the truth. And I think that we women haven't heard a lot of this. I'm currently 44.
You're so young. You are so young.
You know, I look in the mirror.
I just want to tell you this. I just want you to know, look in the mirror and savor it, because 10 years from now, you are going to feel like an idiot for not having savored what you saw in the mirror at 44. I'm not kidding.
Well, I've been completely unprepared, and I know that all women go through this, the M word that you've been alluding to at different stages.
I would say it out loud, but it's just such an, it's such a, don't you think it should have a different, I hate that word.
Yeah, there are lots of things that ought to have more lovely
names.
Why
is the word men in it? I know why. Okay. It's from the Latin, but still, it's so weird. Makes you, it's as if you didn't feel bad enough about it. It's sort of saying you're turning into a guy in some weird way, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
I don't know.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And I actually entered into that. What they call perimenopause, which I didn't even know existed.
Yeah, it didn't exist. It was just invented recently.
Oh,
really, I'm
it?
Not kidding. It did not exist.
I went complaining about a backache, and he said, oh, it's perimenopause. And I literally said to him, peri what?
I know. It's
peri
like,
who?
What are you talking
it's
about?
Like, I know, it's like rigatoni in the 1950s. We just didn't exist.
Kathy, thanks for calling. Let me get another call here, if I may, from Long Lake, New York. Liz is on the line. Hi, Liz. You're on the air.
Hi. I have been listening. I'm actually summering in Long Lake, New York, but I
Lucky
live on
you.
The west side of Manhattan.
Yes.
And
there.
I just want to say there's just two sides to my reason for calling. The Manhattan, as it was the maps on of the New Yorker, where the Upper East Side was known as Botoxia. And, you know, women who really actually could do a little bit better with their plastic surgery than they have, I am not going to go that route. I'm actually sort of fortunate. I have got good bone structure. But
how old are you?
I'm 48. Yes, so I know you, I'm young. I know you're
No, no, I'm just
young,
saying
and
you have
that.
And you have no idea what you're going to do. So don't whatever you do, don't think
too early
you
for
know
promises.
How you are going to feel 10 years from now.
Well, it's interesting because when I come up to the Adirondacks, which I look so forward to, I'm on Long Lake, the north shores of Long Lake, New York.
Beautiful.
I'm in a very rustic camp with no electricity. And I've just noticed, you know, in my mid-40s, things began to change. I used to be able to haul a 5-gallon bucket of water up to the house because we had no, as I said, I'd have to heat the water on the
right.
stove to do the dishes.
Right.
And, you know, just things, your body just really changes. And your skin kind of is like a pair of underwear that's been in the dryer too many times.
and that's 48. Hang on, Liz. Nora, how about it? Does it get better? Do you come to a separate piece about this progress?
No, I don't think so. I think you just kind of struggle with it, and you have moments of total insanity where you actually believe that something that costs $103 at the makeup counter is going to stop time, like Vasco da Gama or something. You're looking for the Fountain of Youth, and you buy yet another jar of face cream, and then you remind yourself after a week that, of course, it didn't work. I think you go on and you try to deal with it, and then you give up, and then you try to deal with it. It's what life is.
How do you think that's all changed? I mean, you were the eldest of four
daughters.
By the
way, I just want to say that the good thing about being in a place with no electricity is that at least you can't see yourself in the mirror most of the time.
Or at least not a well-lit mirror.
Yes. Well, lighting is, you know, you don't want well lit is an interesting expression for, you know.
Right. Sounds scary.
Reading, well, and you know that thing where you're supposed to change your light bulbs to save power.
Yes,
and,
energy.
And be
yeah.
good for the environment mm-hmm. and everything. Mm-hmm. This is also really good for people over certain ages. You should not have any 100-watt light bulbs in your house at all for fear they will shine on you at some moment.
So go green, you say, but I wonder if you're not being too hard on yourself. I mean, think back to your parents. It was screenwriting team themselves, Phoebe and Henry. You're the eldest of four daughters, grew up a lot of the time in Beverly Hills. If you look back on how they aged, are you doing it differently a generation later?
Well, I wouldn't hold my parents up as exemplars of this. You mean my parents' generation?
Well, your parents' generation, how they look today,
well,
and how you look at
it. Half the women that my mother knew in, as I grew up in Beverly Hills were the first people in hair dye. And in the 50s, there was almost only one color you could dye your hair besides kind of powder blue, which was strawberry blonde, which was kind of pink. So I wouldn't say that my parents' friends were any better at navigating this than anyone else. There's just more that you can do now. There's way more you can do. And so people are doing it.
And you're talking about it.
I mean, there's no virtue. To me, there's no virtue about walking around with gray hair. If you want to walk around with gray hair, great. And if it looks good on you, and it really looks great on some women, you should do it. But I don't think anyone deserves stars for accepting the aging process in some, oh, I'm just going to get old and wrinkly, unless that's what they want to do, in which case, great.
You're so much an Upper West Side New York gal now.
I know, but I don't live there anymore.
You've just gone to L.A.? That's it?
No. I now live on the Upper East Side.
Oh, of course, that's right. You make the flip midway through the book. But do you think
yes, one of the things I wanted to write about in the book was moving when you get older, because a lot of us do, for one reason or another, move from wherever you raised your children to a place where there is no room for them to come back. That's one of the reasons why you move to a slightly smaller place, is just so you won't turn into a completely unrealistic sitcom.
We're talking this hour with novelist, screenwriter, director Nora Ephron about life and aging. Her new book is a collection of essays entitled I Feel Bad About My Neck. She wrote Heartburn, she wrote Crazy Salad, Wallflower at the Orgy, Academy Award nominations for When Harry Met Sally, Silkwood, and Sleepless in Seattle. I wish you'd read a little bit more for us. You say you've got beaucoup regrets.
Je regrette beaucoup, yes. There are all sorts of books written for older women. They are, as far as I can tell, uniformly upbeat and full of bromides and homilies about how pleasant life can be once one is free from all the nagging obligations of children, monthly periods, and in some cases, full-time jobs. I find these books utterly useless, just as I found all the books I once read about menopause utterly useless. Why do people write books that say it's better to be older than to be younger? It's not better. Even if you have all your marbles, you're constantly reaching for the name of the person you met the day before yesterday. Even if you're in great shape, you can't chop an onion the way you used to, and you can't ride a bicycle several miles without becoming a candidate for traction. If you work, you're surrounded by young people who are plugged into the marketplace, the demographic, the zeitgeist. They want your job, and someday soon, they're going to get it. If you're fortunate enough to be in a sexual relationship, you're not going to have the sex you once had. Plus, you can't wear a bikini. Oh, how I regret not having worn a bikini for the entire year I was 26. If anyone young is reading this, go right this minute, put on a bikini, and don't take it off until you're 34.
Nora Ephron from I Feel Bad About My Neck. We've got so many people who want to talk with you. Nora, Alan's calling from Sumter, South Carolina. Hi, Alan. You're on the air.
Yes. I just thought, you know, these younger women like that, they've got to wait till they get my age, and then they'll find problems.
Well, how old are you, Alan? How's it going? How old?
I'm 91.
And
Alan, you're a lucky guy. I hope I get there.
I tell you how you get there. You smoke cigars, you drink cognac, and play golf.
Okay, all right.
The only disease you have if you worry about is rigor mortis.
All right, cigars, cognac, and watch out for that one. Alan, thanks for your call. Elizabeth is calling from Harvard, Massachusetts. Hi, Elizabeth, you're on the air.
Hi, yes, I've been listening and laughing. I enjoyed all her books and her movies.
Me
I'm
too.
76. I was the youngest of five sisters. I have five sons, four of whom moved to Harvard and live around the corner, and I have raised all their children.
Really?
I still have one five-year-old and two-year-old. They're not with me today. Their mother's an attorney, and she has today off.
So you've seen your own siblings' age and your own children age.
Yes, yes, that's what I said. I've seen the saggy boobs and the saggy bottoms, and I knew what was in store for me. But there's nothing you can do. I've tried the creams. No. I can't have surgery on my bottom now. It's a little too late, nor the other end either. But I approach each day. I love having the children, and they keep me young and laughing, and I think laughter is a big part of it, which is why I've enjoyed all you've said today. And
thank
I treasure
you.
Each day.
Oh, Elizabeth, thank you so much. Nora, you're a professional humorist. I mean, does it make it easier that you've got a sort of professional incentive to see the humor in it, or... Or do you find, is it harder because you're looking at every dark joke there could be?
Well, no. I mean, I think that I was very lucky to be raised in a home where you were supposed to get through the first response, which was pain, and get to the second response, which was, can I turn this into a funny story? And so I really grew up trained by my parents to do that, partly, I think, because they were absolutely uninterested in listening to painful stories about their children's lives. And so, you know, I'm just doing this lucky thing that my parents taught me, I think.
And turning it into...
But I advise it.
Yeah.
I advise it because it's really much better than, you know. I mean, it's one of the things I kind of wish I had written about in the book, and maybe I will in the next one, is this thing of getting over things. You know, I was with some friends the other day, and one of them was talking about what his mother had done to him. And he's like 71 years old. His mother is long gone.
Enough already.
And get over it. Get over it. It's, you know, it's time.
Does it ever get to be time when you don't want to share everything? Or is that just so deep in the genes? I mean, Salon.com had a wonderful line talking about your life having been cannibalized for page, stage, and screen with roughly the same frequency as Joan of Arc's.
Steph, I was excited about that. But the thing is, you don't really tell everything when you're a writer.
Yeah.
You want people to think you're telling them everything, but you do hold things back. You just tell what you can tell.
And we're listening, ears wide open. Anne's calling from Barrington, Rhode Island. Hi, Anne, you're on the air.
Thank you for making me laugh today.
You're welcome.
It's a great honor. I was calling because my father loved my mom through thick and thin from, you know, till they were in their 80s. And I've recently gotten a chronic disease back and had to have radiation, and so I haven't been able to exercise. And my hips have gotten wider in ways that probably exercise can't take back. And I've noticed that lots of men that I've seen periodically, different trips and stuff like that, who are always so happy to see me, have no interest in me anymore. And so I'm actually calling to say that I think some of women's fixation on trying to look their best is due to men's increasing vanity about who they want to be seen with, especially the baby boomer men, I'm afraid to say. My father was that greatest generation, and I think they just had entirely different values.
So it's tougher if that expectation is there, not the same sort of seasoned readiness to go where nature takes us.
Right, and actually a narcissism about who do I look to be because of who I have on my arm.
Nora, what do you say?
Well, you know, it isn't entirely new because I grew up, one of my favorite books when I grew up was a collection of New Yorker cartoons that was full of old Peter Arno cartoons about old guys with cigars with women who were way taller and way younger than they were. And I remember a moment in my childhood of reading the caption under one of them and saying to my mother, "What is a gold digger?" And my mother explaining this word to me. I mean, this isn't entirely new, what happens to these guys. And yet
that hair dye pushes it out, and as you say, with that goes the frontier of everything else.
Well, I mean, I just think it is a reality, and that's the thing. That's another thing that people don't really write about. It's hard if you are alone after a certain age to find a man who wants to be with someone your age. That's the truth. That is the reality, and it's just full of complications. And I have friends who actually feel wistful about the fact that when they walk down the street, those packs of hateful workmen don't whistle at them. I have no nostalgia for that, frankly, but I know what they mean. They mean that in a metaphorical sense, that we spend a certain amount of our lives being appreciated, and then we spend a certain amount of our times not really being seen.
And you sound beautiful, and we thank you for calling. Let's take a call from Denver, Colorado. Carolyn's on the air. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi there. How are you?
Great. What's going on?
Well, I listen to your show all the time on XM Radio.
Great.
And I figured most of the time I can't call because I'm out of range, but I figured this is the perfect time to call. I'm 57 years old, and I'm calling from my race car.
Race car? You're in the
fantastic
race car.
Yes.
Are you crazy?
No, I'm very not crazy. I have been involved in motorsports for 35-plus years, and finally I got the opportunity to get a race car, so I did it.
So I'm reading here, Carolyn, through the magic of the little computer screen, that you had a tummy tuck, that you had your neck done, but buying the race car was the best treatment.
Yes. Well, I had the tummy tuck, and that made me feel so much better about the way I looked, and I know exactly what Nora means about the neck, the chicken neck, the turkey neck, yada, yada. And I said, well, I've got to get rid of that. That's the only thing I really needed to have done to my face. I still recognize myself in the mirror,
oh,
thank God.
That's great. You went to a good doctor.
Yes, I did. And before I had the tummy tuck and everything, I lost the weight, did the exercise. I work out regularly.
What's your top speed at the track, Carolyn?
Well, I have not had the car on the track yet. I picked it up this past weekend.
You've had this car 3 days, and you think it's a little early, isn't it, with you in the car? It's sort of like it's like you've only had a one or two night stand with the car.
Well, no, this is a car that I have one just like it that I drive on the street. This is a Mini Cooper. And you guys live in New York where nobody drives a car anyway, but it's the car from the Italian Job.
So
I've seen a Mini Cooper by you as a racing car. I thought you were going to tell us that you had an Aston Martin.
No. This is a car that is driven in showroom stock, which is an SCCA class for cars that look like they came out of the showroom. And what you do to them is put in a roll cage, put in a safety seat, the safety harnesses, but you're not allowed to do a lot of modifications.
Sounds like you're ready to roll to me with the roll cage and the safety seat. Carolyn, good luck with it. Take those curves well, and we thank you for calling.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, Nora?
You know, I think that's one of the things that is really important to do when you get older, is to figure out what the thing is that you want to say to yourself. You never want to be there saying to yourself, oh, I never went to Barcelona, or I didn't, one of the things I write about in my book is just bath oil, about being stingy with bath oil. Don't be stingy with your bath oil, because tomorrow you could get some really bad news from the doctor and you're going to feel like an idiot that you were saving 5 cents on bath oil. Another thing that I have definitely moved into in a careful but enthusiastic way are carbohydrates. Because When you get to the life is too short thing, you know, bread. Bread is great. Bread and butter. Bread and salted butter. Have some. It's just great. You know what I mean? You just,
you're
constantly in a dilemma over, am I going to live forever or am I going to die tomorrow? You don't know which the truth is going to be, but on the chance you're going to die tomorrow or next week or next year, bread, have a little.
Also,
I'll tell you another thing. You do not have to have only one dessert. You know that horrible moment when you're going, I just don't know whether to have the chocolate one or the lemon one? Just order them both. At the end of the year, what are we talking about? $100 in extra money? And you could taste both of them.
You know, you raise the word that floats behind all this. You write in the word in the book that you know, sometimes dance around the D word. You write, when you cross into your 60s, death is a sniper. I mean, it's out there. It's a factor behind all this humor.
Yes, and it's a fact for people after a certain age, and that's the thing that nobody likes to really talk about. But that's the truth.
You've lost friends already. How do you deal with it? How do you make it go right along with the extra dollop of bath oil and the loaf of bread? It's
well,
so big.
You do what you can. But the truth is that the sad truth is that, as you get older, your friends become more and more important to you. You trust fewer and fewer of them in the real way that we were just talking about, the ones that you really do talk intimately to. So when you lose a good friend, it feels like, you know, the death of an army, because that was what that friend was for you.
Does it make the manicure more or less important at
some
point?
No, the manicure is not important. It's just a fact. Do you know what I mean? It's just a thing we do. It's that weird thing we all know about, which is that we are capable of going from really important things to really unimportant things in a flash, unless, of course, you're Mother Teresa, who probably did not care about her nails, let's face it. But who is Mother Teresa? Not me.
And we've got a couple of pieces in here that don't go straight to age, though. There's a strand of time. You were an intern in JFK's White House. You write that you may have been the only intern he didn't make a pass at. Why not, Nora?
I know. It's so sad, isn't it? Thinking back on it, I think the main reason was a really bad permanent wave, which just made my hair look terrible. But and I also did not have that White House wardrobe in 1961, where everyone was wearing these sort of perfect A-line linen dresses, and I did not own them. I had really bad clothing. I feel bad about
that. We've got 10 seconds. You and Bill Clinton still not made up, Nora Ephron?
I still haven't forgiven Bill, and I don't think I'm going to.
Nora Ephron's got political views there as well, and a lot to say about life and age. Nora, it's been wonderful talking with you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much, Tom.
It's just been great. Nora Ephron's new book is I Feel Bad About My Neck. Nora, thanks for being with us. Listeners, thank you for joining us. You can continue this conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.